Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org. Well, hello, welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans. And this week we're out in the field. We're actually out of doors in this wonderful weather at Valley View Forest. And it's a Jefferson Land Trust property. And with us are two really important people from the Land Trust. We have Eric Kingfisher, who's the stewardship director, and Carrie Clendeniel, who's the preserve manager. So welcome, you two. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having us. It's exciting.
Nora Petrich, sound engineer, editor. Who's helping all this work. Okay, there are exciting things going on here, but first, let's hear the mystery sound. Quick hint, the maker of this sound is most often heard, but not seen. Now let's go on and talk to Carrie and Eric. Well, we're sitting in this lovely afternoon, beautiful blue skies in the middle of Valley View, and with Carrie and Eric. So I guess the first thing let's do for the listeners, since this is radio, is kind of set the stage. Can one of you talk to me a bit about sort of what Valley View is and what kind of biological systems you've got out here, and just give a quick little background.
Well, this is a pretty cool spot. We're at the 65-acre Valley View Forest, which is owned and managed by Jefferson Land Trust, right here along Center Road, between Center Road and the Chimicum Valley up to the base of Chimicum Ridge.
And it's adjacent to the ridge.
That's right. Yep, we share a long boundary with Chimicum Ridge. And the importance of that is that Valley View, this 65 acres that we're setting on right now, is a pilot, sort of a tester, a phase one for a much larger project. That's a community forest project that Eric's going to talk to us about later, where we are balancing the triplicate goals of ecological protection with economic benefit and community benefit, like recreation and education. So we're mixing all those things here at Valley View, and we're doing that in a variety of ways, including through this unique selective harvest that we're working on right now.
Okay, hold on for that for a minute. I first want to ask you about just the forest in general. Would you describe it as a healthy forest? And in answering that question, what are you looking for? What gives you the answers to is it healthy or not so healthy, or kind of what attributes give you the answer to that?
Yeah. So looking around here at Valley View, a couple of things are really exciting about this place. We have a forest that has been manipulated and harvested over time, as most of our land mass has been in this area. But we have a forest that has also regenerated naturally. And what that has given us is a lot of diversity, a lot of structural diversity, where we've got different sizes and ages of trees, as well as some species diversity, where we've got Douglas fir and western red cedar, a couple of Sitka spruce, some big leaf maple, some red alder. That kind of diversity, the species and structural diversity, is really critical for resilience. It provides the variety of habitat niches, and it provides the variety of nutrients, the seasonality of different food sources and shelter that we really need to maximize the ecological benefits of this place. We've got components of all of that happening here, so we're already on really good track as far as having a healthy forest.
I hear
but
a butt.
I'm just staring at this hillside up above us where we're sitting right now in this lovely sunny opening. And what I see as I look uphill is a lot of darkness and a lot of bare ground. And what we're seeing is that we're having some really dense tree populations that have become so dense that some of the trees are beginning to die out, to become suppressed. And a lot of the ground cover is not having a chance to establish or flourish because it's simply not getting the light, nutrient, water resources it needs. And that's one thing that we can work into our plans here at Valley View, where we can have that selective harvest that also creates the sun, the water, the space needed for a flush of shrub and ground cover growth to benefit wildlife.
Okay, and so that sort of helps go to my next question, which is, I mean, many of us are familiar with Chimicum Creek and the valley and what's been done to restore, particularly a lot of the creek areas. But how does this particular property kind of fit into the sort of overall ecology of the area?
Yeah, we are on a slope above Chimicum Creek, above the Chimicum Valley. This slope is funneling water down through that valley into that creek. And so having a really healthy, diverse, forested buffer is what's going to slow rainwater from hitting the ground, and it's what's going to help filter any of the water from the creek or the sky from the drainages before it hits the valley. And so by having a healthy, diverse forest here, we can really help water quality as it moves downslope.
Okay, so now let's talk. If we'd been out here last week, or I guess even earlier today.
Earlier today.
We would have seen some timber harvest activity. So I want to talk to you about that. And partially, I mean, I think a lot of people would kind of ask the basic question, well, what's the land trust doing tree harvesting? Aren't you supposed to be protecting the land? And I personally know the land trust is very deliberate and conscientious about decisions you make. So what's going on here and why?
It's a really big question, and it's a really good question. And what is going on here on our peninsula is that we have a huge portion of our landmass that is managed as a working forest for timber production. It is part of our history, it's part of our most likely future, it's part of our present. We are going to continue using wood products, and managed forests can actually provide a lot of ecological benefit as well as economic benefit if they are managed in a certain way. And this project at Valley View, and hopefully in the future at Chimicum Ridge, is intended to serve as a model of how forests can be managed to provide those multiple benefits in our landscape of ongoing economic and ecological value.
So let's kind of deepen that a bit. And what are the, I guess, the long-term goals and objectives in addition to being a model? I mean, what do you want to see on the ground in terms of the plant and wildlife community?
Yeah, what we were looking for in a healthy forest,
yeah,
that structural and species diversity, that's what we're working towards. We want to have at least 3 layers of trees going in the forest. We want that big overstory layer. We want a midstory layer. We want seedlings being able to come up. We want a diversity of shrubs. We want ground cover, all in those vertical layers. Horizontally, we want to have areas that are moderately thin. We want some openings that let sunlight in, mm-hmm, to have lots of shrubs for the ungulates. We want some dense patches for other wildlife. We want all of those things to fit in as much as we can, mm-hmm, of this 65-acre forest.
There are short-term, certainly, impacts from any forest harvesting. How do you balance those short-term impacts with this kind of longer-term forest and ecological health goal?
Mm-hmm.
How do you weigh that?
Carefully.
Uh-huh.
With a lot of planning, there are going to be short-term impacts to this forest, and there's going to be long-term impacts to this forest. We'll have a relatively quick turnaround on our understanding of if this prescription, if this activity that we're doing right now is resulting in what we hope for, which is a flush of shrubs and ground cover and seedling layers.
So you would expect to see that relatively...
within a year.
Oh, quite quickly, yeah.
Yeah, I think in a year we should start to see that happening. What we don't see happening right now is shrub recruitment, is seedling recruitment. Mm-hmm. It's just not happening. There's not at any significant level. So we've got this baseline condition of forest looks pretty good right now, but as things progress, as the trees continue to grow and suppress each other, we're not getting that next generation starting on its own.
Okay, so as I look around from where we're sitting, I'm seeing some trees with blue taped marked, and I'm seeing some sort of fuchsia markings. Tell me a bit about how you're, you know, selecting what to leave and what to take.
Mm-hmm. So our selection of what to leave and what to take is based upon that balance that we're trying to strike of meeting those objectives of enhancing that structural and species diversity. We also have some economic objectives. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an economically viable model, which is important if we're talking about this as a pilot project for a larger landscape. So how do we actually figure out which trees stay, which trees go? Firstly, we are looking at which trees are the healthiest.
Mm-hmm.
So which trees have the most branches and leaves, the greenest, the strongest, the biggest, compared to the tree next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we leave those trees that look the healthiest, the most robust, as our first go around. Yeah. Next, you got two trees that are standing next to each other. They both look really green. They look happy. They've got more than 50% of their trunk covered in live branches. We start looking at if there's a tree amongst those two that has a structurally unique top, like a fork where a bird might want to nest.
Uh-huh.
And we leave that tree so that we have a healthy tree that also has these unique heavy-duty wildlife benefit, if you will. After that, we start looking at the species of the tree. So everything else still looks really good.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to leave that western red cedar, or are you going to leave that Sitka spruce? In our case, we've got a lot of western red cedar here. It is the vast majority of what is in this forest at the moment. We would choose to leave the less dominant species,
the
Sitka spruce, or the red alder, or the big leaf maple in this case.
Okay, and is there a trunk diameter size bunch of information you consider?
Yes, everything 8 inches and under stays automatically. That's our next generation.
So that's the next generation,
sure. That's there. Anything larger than 8 inches, we try to space approximately 24 feet apart so that each individual
has room to grow.
Tree has room to grow. That is the critical piece here. We have too many trees in too small a space. They need more space. That's equating out to about 24 feet based upon our current sizes of trees. But we've got some really nice bigger trees in this forest, nice bigger trees that we don't have a ton of in the surrounding landscape. So everything 35 inches and above, as a general rule, gets left as a leaf tree. So what that means is you've got the biggest trees, the 3 foot diameter up trees, our leaf trees, the small trees are leaf trees, everything between about 9 inches and 35 inches is potentially available for harvest.
Okay, so those are the ones you kind of look at really closely.
Exactly.
Now, I only know enough to ask this next question. Ecologists and forestry folks are learning a lot more about the underground sort of fungal network, the rhizome, mycorrhizal network that connects trees that, in a way, share and transport nutrients. And of course, you know, we all can visualize that any disturbance of the ground through something like logging is going to disturb that. How do you think that through, and how do you kind of preserve as much of that unseen function?
Yeah, good question. I think we're still learning a lot about the mycorrhizal networks. But one of the things I'm really excited about in our particular plan here at Valley View is that we've got three somewhat unique components, in that we have these permanent wildlife leaf trees that are designated across the whole working forest. We've got a minimum of 4 of those per acre. So those are going to become the future forest giants.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole set of considerations that went into which tree was selected as the permanent wildlife leaf tree. We did that with community members, and that was really interesting discussions. So we've got those, and their root networks will remain in place through every single harvest.
Okay.
In addition to that, we've got objectives around how many downed logs we want remaining in the forest, how many standing snags we want in the forest, And those dead wood components are actually really critical to housing those fungal networks. So it's a strong piece of our plan is to maintain as much of that as possible.
That sounds much more conscientious and deliberate than one sort of normally thinks about in a commercial harvesting operation. Yeah,
this is a very different situation. And the reason that you see those blue marked leave trees around this harvest area right now is because this is so different that our forester and our staff and our volunteers had to come through and mark all of the trees to meet the prescriptions objectives.
You use the phrase community forest. So now I want to turn to Eric, because I know you've been really doing a lot of thinking about community forests kind of in general or in theory and what they could mean here in Jefferson County. I think Carrie mentioned this is sort of the first step in the goal of creating a community forest. In this situation, what is a community forest?
Yeah, great. Great. No, it is exciting time to be talking about community forestry. If we take a step back in time, Jefferson Land Trust has been doing a lot of different kinds of conservation over the years, a lot of different habitat conservation. Thousands of acres of habitat lands have been protected in the county over the years through the Jefferson Land Trust. And there's been a lot of farmland protection done. And there's been some working forest land protection done. When we say working forest lands, we're typically just referring to a property that is going to be managed for some kind of timber production. And when we call it a working forest, it's just sort of a nomenclature we use. And the idea of community forestry became pretty apparent to us individually as staff and board members over the course of time. And then we included it as an objective when we drafted and published our conservation plan, our strategic conservation plan in 2010. Community forestry was one of the things we knew we could do to help preserve and protect the working forest landscape around us. We want to see our landscape retain a lot of its forest lands for future generations. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we think we can do that, and we're certain we can do that, is through community forestry. And so we've been on a journey since then, once we made that commitment in our strategic conservation plan, to work towards establishing a community forest here in Jefferson County and start to practice that community forestry. And it's a long story, it's a long journey, and there's a great resource on our website at saveland.org about that journey. There's a lot of information in there about that. This property, how it fits in that whole story, is we acquired this property for the purpose of community forestry. That was its real main purpose. Being adjacent to Chimicum Ridge, which is 853 acres, and the whole top of that main landform between the Center and Beaver Valleys, being adjacent to that, this property was a really important strategic acquisition in the bigger picture vision of establishing a quite large community forest here in Jefferson County between Beaver Valley and Center Valleys. We knew this would be a great place to have, say, like a parking area, which we've established on the property, some trails, and eventually a main access point for the broader over 900 acres that we're hoping to establish.
To the ridge itself.
So it's sort of a gateway property to the community forest that we have in mind, that we've been planning towards and working towards and fundraising towards for more than 10 years now. And so that was one of the main purposes of buying this place, that it had a really nice complex forest that we could start managing as a community, and it was an access point for all this recreation and other benefits that might come from acquiring the adjacent 853 acres.
So how did you get the community in this community forest?
There's a couple different things that have occurred on this property that help this be part of essentially sort of a pilot community forest for us. The Valley View Forest of 65 acres was acquired in part using some funding we competed for nationally through the U.S. Forest Service. I think one of the ways that we think about this with ecological forestry, the forestry that's working with the forest ecosystem and retaining forest ecosystem, we're not starting over with the forest, not clear-cutting the forest, is we're trying to retain a lot of ecological function of this place. And these impacts are sort of mimicking some of the natural disturbances that have happened over the course of time as part of what we're trying to establish here. I mean, all these forests have different kinds of disturbance that they've...
Sure, like storm...
Yeah, big wind throw events, that's our major disturbance. There's fire events, of course. Yeah. There's disease and all sorts of things. And logging sort of mimics that. And if you do it right, it mimics it really well. And over time, the forest has a capacity to rebound. And what we're trying to do is instigate a nice, healthy rebound that's going to give us a whole new structure of diversity, of the forest. You're going to have younger trees coming in. You're going to have different size trees coming in. It's going to diversify the forest. There's not really a single definition for community forestry or community forests that people go by, but we as a community have helped establish one. And one of the dimensions of community forestry is that we're working with the community, that the community has a say in its management. The community has some involvement in the management planning process. And so when we acquired this property, we put the word out to the community in lots of different channels and asked a lot of different stakeholders and leaders in the area to come join us for a meeting where we could talk about what we could do with this property. Here we go. We're talking about establishing this as a community forest. Here's the management plan that we've developed with a forester. What's some feedback you have for us? What's some thoughts you have for this? What kind of things can we do to change this to make it more aligned with the community and the objectives of long-term thinking about the well-being of Chimicum, the Chimicum area, and the people around here? And that was a really productive conversation, and it informed our long-term management of the property. And then our other objectives that are woven into this management plan that we developed and also into the actual operations going on right now, that Carrie was talking about just a little bit earlier, is that some of these logs we're trying to bring to the community. We want to get some of these logs in the hands of different community members. So we've reached out to over a dozen nonprofits locally that have been involved in this journey so far with us.
Give me a couple examples.
Well, there's the more obvious ones are like the School of Wood and Boat Building.
Sure.
There's the Portown School of Woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's been others like the other nonprofits and the tribes that have been involved in the conversation over the course of this 10 plus years of talking about community forestry to reach out to and say, hey, we're doing a harvest. We want to connect some of these logs with your missions. We will give you a tree. We will give you a log, and there's ways to process that locally. We can give you some connections there, but we'd like to see you start to, you know, consider using some of this local wood. And so we've got a few takers, and we're trying to figure out all the logistics of that because there's just not a lot of systems in place for something like that right now. And so we're considering this sort of like a pilot project, and we want to establish more of that connection and more of the system connectivity between good merchantable logs in the forest, selectively harvested, going to local resources, local community benefit organizations, other benefits to the community, having local mills process some of the logs for local lumber and then projects that could be used in that way, whether that's a custom home or trail building or any number of different things that might be done, or local wood.
So it's quite a bit different than sort of putting logs into the commercial stream.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're doing that too because we don't have a system in place to really process all of this
right.
locally. But in the longer term vision, and there seems to be an opportunity and a window to potentially establish more of a processing hub here somewhere so we can do a little bit more value-added production here of the wood that we're growing all around us.
Well, and you mentioned the tribes. Tell me a bit about their interests and how you've responded to that.
Great, yeah. We've got a good friendship with our local Sklallam tribes, Jamestown Sklallam tribes and the Port Gamble Sklallam tribe. We work with them on a lot of different things and worked with them throughout the whole conversation around community forestry as well. I should say that in the 2020 year, which was a wild year for everybody in lots of different ways, we endeavored to jump into a big community forest vision process with the community. And we reached out to dozens and dozens of different stakeholders, including our local tribal partners and friends, and asked a lot of questions about what does it mean to be a community forest for us here locally, really. And we had a lot of great conversations about that, and who is this community forest going to serve? Who's it not going to serve? You know, how do we make sure there's equity involved in all of this and inclusion in all of this? And all those questions were really healthy and good to have in these big conversations that we ended up having throughout 2020 through dozens of different meetings. And one of the things that came out of that was some site visits with the different tribal members and staff and tribal members from these different local tribes, and walked around Upper Chimicum Ridge property and even some of this property to consider what are some of the ways in which some of the resources that are growing here could service that community, their communities. And that includes everything from traditional, you know, food and medicine harvest to even to some local wood products that they could be using. And so we're developing kind of understanding around that, and we want to make a really nice, clear, open access for them. That's what the community came to. It's like, mm-hmm. yes, the tribal access is fundamental to what it means to be a community forest for us, and we're going to monument that in something we developed, what we call the Strategic Vision Framework, which is a document you can find online at our on our website, saveland.org. It's a really great rundown of all the different things we've done over that course of that time, and really the story of this place and this community forest journey. One fun thing that we did was when this harvest was being planned, we reached out to our tribal partners and said, hey, there's a lot of cedar. Is anybody interested in doing some traditional harvest of cedar bark out here for different tribal purposes? And we had about 8 carloads of folks come out from the Port Gamaskalam tribe to harvest cedar from trees that were going to get harvested.
The cedar bark
the cedar bark, yeah,
for basketry,
for weaving, and all sorts of different things. And it was a really wonderful Saturday event.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I want to thank both of you for your time and coming out and answering some questions. And I hope that we can do this again. And, you know, I'm particularly thinking, Carrie, you said something would happen in a year. Maybe we'll be back in a year.
That'd be pretty cool.
So thank you both.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you.
Well, that was fun talking to the two of them. Let's hear the mystery sound again. That was the upward spiraling flute-like sound of the Swainson thrush. If you actually see them in the forest, they're usually somewhat close to the ground. They're kind of a medium brown. The ones in this part of the world have a little russet color on their backs and wings. And they pluck at berries and they glean bugs off leaves and they perch around on branches and stumps and look for prey. So thank you for listening. And our ending music today is called Spirit of the Forest by a group called Baka Beyond. It's a world music group formed in 1992 with members from a wide variety of backgrounds and cultures.
Dungeness River Nature Center is proud to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature. Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.